I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, much more importantly, activist and wonderful author of the book, Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction. Wonderful. Diane Briskey is our very special guest. We encourage everyone to listen to everything that we've been doing and part of a series. And we don't care what order you listen to them, but listen to them and certainly take a stand and watch what we're doing with our natural resources. Frank McKay here. Diane, how are you?
I'm fine, Frank.
Last time we spoke, we spoke about the oceans and we spoke about, in general, we touch on all the time about how little people understand about the smaller things. And when you really get down to smaller things, you're talking about insects. And often right. people think about insects and they just think about swatting them away. But in general, they're very important for our ecology and our environment. If you could, share what's going on with our instincts, with our insects. Is anyone close to extinction?
Yes, there are a few. I don't know exactly. Some of them are certain kinds of butterflies. And the last time we talked about the gypsy moth. Now, a lot of people, I don't know if they have them in other states, but I know in Michigan, truly would like to make them extinct because they ruin, they eat the trees from the inside. So there are some that nobody is going to cry if they're no longer there. Mosquitoes, of course, they carry Lyme disease, and some people are allergic to the bites. I don't know if people are aware that the ones, the mosquitoes that do bite you are the females. They, you know, suck your blood, and then they, in turn, that feeds their young wherever their nests are. But there are, and a lot of people really want to do away, or they're very, very scared of bats. And in reality, the bats that come out at night, each one can eat over 6,000 mosquitoes.
Wow.
And I've been fishing at night where I've actually seen them, you know, flying over me, and I know that they're not going to, you know, hit me in any way because they've got the echolocation. So there's a lot of people that have the bug zappers. You know, you can hear them going, you go, whoop, but there goes another mosquito.
Yeah.
But there are some that really do us justice. They get a bad rap because they're kind of ugly, like the praying mantis. The praying mantis is an insect that eats the aphids off your plants.
Yeah.
And, you know, aphids kill, you know, your flowers. But there's flora that helps to keep those insects away. Now, I know marigolds are repugnant to ants and aphids. So insects that would normally get into your house or your garden, there's some flowers that will help them to kind of be like a wall, which Mexico doesn't have to pay for, to stop them from going in. Now, one thing I did learn is that there is an orange ladybug. And it's an orange, I don't know if you want to consider it a beetle, but it is, it bites, it stings. And I know my house up north, when I go up there, there's a lot of them. Most of them are dead, but they sting, which I didn't know. The article says that they sting, but they don't bring you good luck because other ladybugs eat the aphids too. So when we're trying to get rid of one, we don't necessarily want to stop the population of the good ones. And we know that one of the insects that's on the threatened list is the bumblebee. Now, the bumblebees and the honeybees, they help in the pollination of the flowers. And, you know, a lot of people are allergic to the pollen, But they take that back to their hives, and that's where they make the honeybees, especially. That's where they make their honey from, is the pollen. And aeronautically, the bumblebee is not supposed to be able to fly because it's so heavy.
Yeah.
But what it does is it goes back to a different flower and brushes off some of that pollen. And, you know, you have female plants and male plants. Well, then that's how we get the population of those plants going, because of the bees. And but there are some bees that you really don't want around, and wasps. I can't see any logical explanation to keep wasps in the world, because I don't think they really make anything. We've seen them, and I've had them, the mud wasps, make this great big circular, looks like a paper mache balloon, and they make it out of the mud. And naturally, they can get into your house through any crevice. But, you know, I kind of warn people, be prepared or do some background on anything that you see in your house that you don't know. Now, there was one article that I read about the brown spider. Now, I know that there's probably no houses that don't have some kind of a spider.
Yeah, everyone has them.
Yeah, you have them. But you have to be careful on, if you see a spider that you've never seen before, leave it alone. Don't even go near it. And the brown spider is very venomous. And they're in the leaves. They can come into the house where it's warm. They can be in the woods. They can be in your flower beds. So if you see it, and it's not a fairly good size. It's a regular spider size, and it's brown. You can't miss it. And it is very venomous. And there's been articles where people have actually died because you get bitten by a spider or a bee. You know, you don't think of anything. But this is a venomous spider, and all spiders bite. Even
yeah.
The little, you know, the little daddy long legs, he has a bite. You know, and the old folk tale was, if you step on a spider, it's going to rain. I don't know. My mother always said that. If you step on a spider, it's going to rain.
Yeah.
So I've always just, you know, I let them go their way. You know, if I see one crawling on, you know, something, a piece of paper, I just kind of flush it away somewhere. You know, I don't have any reason to kill something that I don't know about. But if you see a spider, and there are some very pretty ones out there, just leave it alone, because you don't know. And if by any chance you or your child or somebody gets bit by one, go to the hospital right away. With the brown spider, right now they don't have an antidote for that. They will try other things to get that out of your system. It's like they used to say, well, you know, in the cowboy days, if you get by a rattlesnake, you know, cut it and suck out the
venom.
No, don't do that. That is not the way to do it. You know, it breaks some of the myths that, you know, we've had for decades. But the aphids, I know, when I was teaching school, you know, kids are, oh, I'm going to bring something to my teacher. Well, I never got any apples or anything. But the lady that taught below me had a second grade class, and one of her students brought in a cocoon. And I thought, oh, that's really great. So we waited and waited. And when it finally came out, it was a beautiful sequoia moth, just gorgeous.
Wow.
So the kids saw it, and it was rather large. Yeah, so I had a little girl come in. I used to get tulips that had bumblebees in them. I don't know if that was a reflection on me or not. But a little girl brought in a cocoon, and I said, oh, this is going to be a great science, Cindy, because I'm going to get one of these moths.
Yeah.
Well, I came in one day, and I must have had a gazillion aphids on my desk. So
what, a zillion what? What was it, a zillion what?
Aphids.
What is that?
Aphids. Those are the little tiny bugs that eat your flowers.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh no, I'm sorry. I take that back. They were praying mantises. Little teeny tiny ones, about even half the size of a pin. So I had to call the science teacher and say, would you come up here and take some of these praying mantises away? But you can send a wave of them online.
No kidding.
And, yes, and sprinkle them in your gardens, and it'll take care of all those bugs. So not that I would send a waveform or anything, but there's the monarch butterfly, and some of them are eaten by birds because they're so colorful. Now, I can understand. Well, their lifespan is very short. Birds will not eat a monarch butterfly, even though it's beautiful to look at, and you really see them everywhere, because they got a bitter taste. So they kind of get a reputation.
Wow.
But they flock down in hordes, and I believe it's in New Mexico, or I know it's out west somewhere, that the trees are just loaded with them. I mean, and it's a really beautiful sight. And they appear up north if they happen to, you know, vacation up here. And the milkweed plant is where they make their cocoon. Now, if your listeners have not seen a milkweed, it has a pod that kind of looks like a large fat bean. And during the summer, it's closed. And when it opens up, those little, we used to call them Santa Clauses.
Yeah.
They had like a little seed, and then I used to call them poof poofs, that float in the air. Well, wherever they land, another plant's going to grow.
Yeah, right.
That's the ecosystem.
Yeah, that's how it goes. I mean, let me just remind folks that are just tuning in, or just turning on their radios or their computers, you're listening to the voice of Diane Briskey, and she's the author of the wonderful Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction. Frank McKay here with Diane. And continue, because this is, it's important. And again, people poo-poo insects because, they're an annoyance, or sometimes they're ugly, or they're whatever. But they really do have a usefulness, obviously, or they wouldn't be here. But something that you just said, you said every one of those pieces of flower, those pieces of, turn into another plant. And do you know, they used to, as a kid, we here on Long Island, we used to pick up the, I guess they were dandelions, you know, I don't know what you would call them, and you'd blow on them and you'd make a wish. And they're weeds, basically, but everywhere, one of those things fell. I remember the older guys would tell us, and I don't know whether it was a myth or not, but every time you blew one of them, it would land somewhere else and create more weeds. So, like these unintended consequence, you know, or the insects, if you concentrate on this happens. I mean, how much of that, how much of all of what we're doing comes from unintended consequences?
You know, I would say not many. You know, there are invasive species of plants that get into lakes. We have here what's called, a milkweed of some sort, or a millweed that is on our lakes. Once it gets there, it more or less takes over the natural water plants. So our lake is sprayed every year for that. Some of the invasive species that are in the woods take over the natural plants. But as far as like the dandelion, I don't know how it tastes, and I'm pretty sure that it's the Italian people that make wine from it, because we can see them a certain time of year. It's just covered with the yellow blooms, and there's people out there with bushel baskets picking them. Now, we used to say, we used to take the yellow flower, and if you rubbed it under your chin, it means you like butter.
Right. Yeah, that's know, right. Yeah, we did the same thing.
but it is true about the seeds of another poo-poo flower.
Yeah.
But also pine cones. Now, the pine cones are nutritious to animals like raccoons and squirrels. And, you know, they eat them, and you can see the pine cones under the trees that have been eaten. But, and this is another thing about any other animal, too, that eats, that's an herbivore. They'll eat the plant, and the plants have the seeds. When these animals go to different places and defecate, they're replanting the earth. Mm. A lot of people don't realize that. That a seed, no matter whether it's for a tiny plant or a big tree, we call them helicopters.
Yeah.
That, you know, you throw in the air and they whirl down. There's a seed at the end of that. So when they fall from the tree, it's going to land someplace else. It may take maybe 4 years to grow, but that's still a tree, a flower of repopulating that species. And you got so many different trees and all over the world, and that's biodiversity in their aspect of life. Just like in the oceans, on land, in the deserts, there's a community. The biodiversity of the different animals and plants. There's a community of different organisms. And hopefully, if there's nothing that is there to destroy it, it thrives. And it gives off some of its highlights, if you want to refer to that, to other parts of that region, so that that community grows, and then more species come in, and that's what your biodiversity is. And what people don't understand is that once that community is ruined, you can't get it back.
Yeah.
That's what the biologists and the marine biologists and researchers are trying to do now, is by taking water samples, some plant samples, to find out why this is happening. Now, there was an article that I read this morning about the coral and other animals under the ocean. One of the big threats is carbon emissions.
Huh.
And that is covering the water, like the oil. And that's ruining. That's some of the one of the things that's ruining the coral. And I want to put a plug in for people. If they go to the number 4ocean.com, this is an organization that is doing, I think, a fantastic job.
What is the name of the organization?
Right now, 4, you know, the number 4,
yeah.
ocean.com. And they will tell you what they're doing. In 2017, they took out 300,000 pounds of garbage out of the ocean. And they have bracelets. In fact, I have one on. When you buy one of these bracelets, that is the equivalent to 25 pounds of garbage that they will take out. That's what the money goes for. And you can see pictures of hooks that are taken out, old tires. Plastic is a death sentence on just about so many critters.
Yeah.
Because of what's in the plastic. So these people are taking this plastic and recycling it into these real pretty beads. And it's a bracelet that, you know, you can just wear, but it's a reminder to you that, hey, I'm helping to take what's in this bracelet out of our oceans to make them cleaner. They also have bracelets that you can buy that are coral. They take the dead coral and they make the bracelets. That money goes for them replenishing coral, because we talked the last time about the warm water.
Yeah.
And some of the pollutants are turning the coral gray. Well, they are taking some of that back to their labs, and they're growing coral to put in the various places where there at one time was a beautiful coral reef.
Right, so they're farming it, basically. Let me stop you right there. Keep your thought. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break. Frank McKay here with Diane Britsky. She's the author of Now You See Me, From Endangered to Extinction. And we encourage everyone to binge listen to everything we're doing. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you next time on Breaking It Down.